Everybody joining me next up on the show, as I promised at the top of the show, Chris Lee. Check him out over at the Southeastern 14 and VandySports.com. And Chris, appreciate the time coming on the show.
Oh, always a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely glad to have you on, as always. Y'all do a great job over at Southeastern 14. You know, it's got to be really one of the more, or coming off one of the more busier times with everything on college basketball, then when baseball's going on at the same time, and then spring football's going on. I was talking with somebody a while back. I said, everybody looks at football as a busy time, but the springtime has got to be actually one of the more busier times when you're covering college athletics or a conference like this.
Yeah, I think that probably March is my busiest time, and it kind of busies you to the point of exhaustion. Because you're trying to follow a lot of things. You know, football is always going on in the background. The NCAA tournament and SEC basketball have probably never been a bigger brand, at least in a long time, and well, probably ever. And then you've got baseball, which is probably as strong as it's ever been. It's just, it is a lot to follow.
Yeah, I don't even know the people that also add the softball coverage in there, how they go about doing
it. Yeah, we have drawn the line with that one. We would like to, but you've got to be realistic about what you can do.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I guess that's more like for if you're a beat writer or for a team or something like that, and you're probably jumping around all different places. You know, not SEC related, but obviously, you guys were covering the tournament, everything going on there. Of course, Alabama did not make it to the national championship game, but UConn and Purdue, Monday night's championship game. Anything special stick out to you about that game?
I just think UConn's dominance to me was a story. You know, Purdue was a really, really good team, and I thought this has got a chance to be, you know, one of the best championship games we've ever seen, and it just never really materialized that way. And I think that had a lot to do with UConn. I mean, I go back and look at them now, and I know Klingon got injured some, but my goodness, you almost wondered in watching them how they ever got beat by anybody. They're so good. The way they were able to choke off Purdue's three-point shooting. I'm not going to say they just gave Edie what he wanted, because they certainly didn't, but he did get, what, 37, 39 points, whatever the tally was, and they weren't easy for him. Klingon did a great job, but I think they were the number one three-point shooting team in the country. And, I mean, I haven't checked it, but I bet the makes and the hits probably for Purdue were season low. And to be able to do all that at once was just amazing. And it's a reason Connecticut was what it was. I think Dan Hurley now, I don't know, best coach in the game might be premature when you got guys like Bill Self and John Calipari that have achieved a lot of things over a longer period of time, but certainly right now he's got that program rolling in a way that nobody else has done lately. And I think it's a testament, because I think it's harder than ever to dominate the game with all the parity and the portal and everything. And just what an amazing run we witnessed for UConn through all of it.
Yeah, I think they're average margin of victory was greater this tournament than it was last year. It was like 14, I think, last year. Now, he threw the stat up during the game last night. I think it was at that time going into last night, Monday night, was like 18 points. Yeah, I got the numbers here. Purdue, 1 of 7 for 3, so they'd only made one, and UConn was letting them shoot it. And I was going into that game thinking, too, like the big man battle is what everybody's going to focus on between Klingon and Edie. But I was looking, I just thought the UConn guards, the perimeter, was better than Purdue. And you see it with Castle had 15, Tristan Newton had 20. And they really, like you said, pretty much just stopped them from even attempting the three-point shot. So what was your kind of like thoughts going into the game?
My thought going into the game was that the matchup to the bigs was really intriguing. I thought that if any team had a chance to beat Connecticut, it was Purdue, because of the combination of not just Zach Edey, but again, the three-point shooting. But the way Connecticut just was able to get out and defend on the perimeter was just an amazing sight to behold. And again, I think that is what won them the game, the ability to do that.
Yeah, if you can lock that off. And then, like I said, Edey, Chris, I thought Edey was, at first, it was just Dawson. Is he just going to score all the Purdue points? Which he almost did. Yeah. Braden Smith's the only other player that went over 10. I mean, if you just look at the box score for Purdue, Not a lot of players scored last night. They had, I got in front of me, five players scored. So that's not going to do any good in these big time games.
Yeah, you needed one of those guards to pop up and give you 20 if you're Purdue to have a good shot to win, and that just wasn't going to happen last night.
Which Heidi, their forward, did have an awesome dunk. Give him that. He had one of the better highlights. I was watching the game. I was just sitting in my recliner watching the game. And, Chris, I partially got up out of my seat when I saw that dunk. It was just one of those highlights. You know, they lost, but still great with them. Talk about Alabama. Of course, talking about they did not make a turn. I mean, they gave UConn a great game. It felt like Saturday night in that matchup against UConn, every time Alabama got close, you know, or they got a little bit of a lead, UConn was separating. That's what championship teams do. I mean, Alabama was red hot there in the first half, shooting a three. And obviously, that was going to be their route if they were to upset UConn. Of course, we know they didn't. But this run for Alabama overall, in your mind, how did Alabama do it? Because going into the tournament, they were 5-5. They got eliminated by Florida in the quarterfinals of the SEC tournament. That was their second loss in that span to Florida. I mean, they had a couple overtime wins, but Alabama was not playing well. And I was of the mindset, I was questioning, could they get out of the first weekend and they make it all the way to the Final Four? Just watching this team as they progressed, what did you see different out of Alabama versus what you saw out of them during the season?
Well, look, I was even a little more skeptical than you were. I saw that Alabama had been given trouble by teams that were able to play fast at times, like Florida, and outdo what they did at things, maybe by defending a little better. And I thought that Charleston was a team. You always kind of pick your upsets in the tournament, not because you necessarily think they're going to happen, but because they're going to happen somewhere. Mm-hmm. And that looked to me like a could-happen-somewhere spot. It did not happen, and Alabama got on a roll. But Let's take the optimistic and the pessimistic view of Alabama basketball. I'll start with the pessimistic. We always knew that the thing that could undo Alabama could be the inability to get stops, because we saw that all year. You heard Nate Oates express frustration with his team and say things like, well, we can't defend and everybody knows it. And that just seemed to be the place where that season was going to end. But if you looked on the other side, you saw a team that could probably hit 23s on a given night. And that I'm not going to say that you couldn't defend Alabama, but it was hard because pace and things like that are big talking points in college basketball, and they should be. But I almost thought Alabama was almost pace-proof with the way that it ran its offense. You got a guard in Mark Sears who seemed to never get tired and lose his efficiency. He could play fast. They rotated the ball around the perimeter so much. So I thought that what teams could do to, you know, usually do, you see teams that can grind you to a crawl offensively. Like Clemson did it. And I thought Clemson could be a problem for some teams in the tournament, which it was because of that ability to do that. But Alabama, just because it just plays faster and gets the ball around the horn at a quicker pace than anybody, and has a lot of guys who can shoot it efficiently. That's what I mean by sort of being tempo proof. I thought that was always the trait that had a chance to prevail. And I think in the tournament, it did more often than not. And that's why Alabama got as far as it did.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, going forward, you got to think Nate Oates is looking to, okay, we pretty much sure Alabama, just you go by history, his teams, they've shot the three ball well since he's been there.
Yeah.
Get better at bigs. I mean, I think offensively, their big guys are good offensive players that can put the ball in a basket, not necessarily around the basket, but they can put it in there. Defensively, up front, I remember last year with Bediako, they had a rim protector. Like, you didn't want to go at the basket against Alabama. Didn't really have that this past year. Is that kind of are you in that thinking, or you think maybe they need to go a different route, or just to get better next year? Of course, you know, you go in the Final Four, that's a really great year, but just kind of like have the overall consistency of a season.
Well, look, everybody would like to have everything, right?
Yeah.
You'd like to have a star point guard. You'd like to have a shooting guard who gives you 18 a night and hits 45% from three. You'd love to have an eraser on the back end. You'd love to have four or five complimentary players, but it's hard to do that, right? I mean, you saw maybe the one or two teams that did it, and they were in the championship game. So look, you've seen Nate Oates been able to get elements of this and that. Let's go back 3 years when they had Herb Jones, who was player of the year. It was a guy that team defended well. The team last year, even though it didn't get as far in the postseason as this one did, was a better team overall. And part of the reason was because it defended. It had a star in Brandon Miller, who was a one and done. This year it was guys that a year ago Alabama fans had never heard of, and Mark Sears. And, you know, Rylan Griffin was on the team too, but you get the point. Guys that transferred in like Reitzel and Nelson and guys that were not household names in the state of Alabama a year ago. So Nate Oates is so good and so methodical and so just diligent in his work ethic and his methods and so purposeful that I would never count him out, you know, of getting a little bit of everything he needs. That could be possible, but here's a guy that just showed that he can also get a team to a Final Four that had some pretty glaring holes and did it in spite of it.
Yeah, exactly. Which, you know, I live in Alabama. I mean, Alabama football fans look at the basketball team. You know, they think they got to have everything, Chris. Alabama fans, they're kind of in that that mindset. We got to have everything. That's what they think. Talk about Coach Calipari leaving Kentucky. And this is kind of like a broad general question, but why did he go to Arkansas?
I think when you're at Kentucky, and look, there's been a lot of pressure on him. Somebody put out a tweet, Fairleigh Dickinson has won more NCAA tournament games this decade than has Kentucky. Now, look, that's playing a little bit fast and loose with some facts, because one of those was in a Dayton game. But you get the point that I'm making. You know, you never thought with Kentucky, and especially where John Calipari had the program a decade ago, that would be a talking point. And it just felt like that $33 million buyout was an albatross around everybody's neck. It sort of bound him to Kentucky, because it's hard to pay that amount to make a coach walk away, although I think Vanderbilt just did that with an amount pretty close when it got rid of Jerry Stackhouse. So there is that. But that was kind of the thing that it was almost like being in a bad marriage that everybody knew needed to end, but you had to stick it out for the sake of the kids or whatever. And with his relationships with the Tyson Chicken people and some Arkansas boosters and Hunter Yurcheck sort of being in a bind with missing out on some top targets, it's one of those, I don't know, almost marriages of convenience. Kentucky is happy because he walks away and somebody else is paying the buyout. Calipari is happier because he's walking away and not having to deal with that albatross of expectations and not making the Final Four in how many ever years it's been now, longer, what, 8 years or whatever it's been. That's one of those that you're thinking, all right, it's hard to pull off, but if you're in a spot where you can pull it off, it makes sense for a lot of people, and I feel like that's where maybe that's settled.
Yeah, you know, and that's kind of like been a commentary. I've seen a lot. Just it was good for both. Good for Arkansas, obviously, yeah. And then good for Kentucky, because, you know, just sometimes it's just you need a break. You need to separate. We've seen that a lot because it gets stale, you know. And I know we're looking at Kentucky. Well, it was 2019 last time they got out of the first weekend. What do you think – what is Arkansas getting with this John Calipari?
Man, that's the million-dollar question, isn't it? Mm-hmm. I don't know. There's part of me that says, first of all, you're Kentucky. And in Kentucky, you can do things that nobody else can do historically because of the ceiling of that program. And that can mean a lot of things. I don't mean that disparagingly, but it's a program that, oh, I can't remember now if they're number one in wins or North Carolina is. It's flipped a few times, but the point is they're up there in that discussion of top two or three programs ever, wherever you want to put them. And here's a guy who built an empire on one and dones, right? And he did it better than anybody else has ever done it and embraced it and said, hey, that might mean we need to flip an entire roster the next year. The names on the jerseys you're rooting for are completely different from year to year. But, man, that was a needle he threaded for so long. And then in the middle of when they started to slip a little bit, and sometimes with teams like that, you just don't hit for whatever reason. I remember the NIT team that lost to Robert Morris or whoever. For whatever reason, that team just didn't hit. And occasionally with young kids, You know, some of them aren't as good as they were cracked up to be. You have chemistry issues, whatever. There are ways we can name where it goes wrong. But it felt like, for the most part, he had that one-and-done model. And you all remember where it started with Cousins and Wall and some of those guys on his first teams and how good they were. Well, and then comes COVID in 2020, and the tournament gets canceled, and the landscape changes, and the portal opens, and NIL, and all these things. And all of a sudden, the way that he's built his program, he's vulnerable because now other teams are fielding teams that aren't as talented as his. But, like, you look at UConn in the tournament. Cam Spencer is a 24-year-old shooting guard. Out of high school, he averaged 3 points a game at a Patriot League school his first year. Well, you let a guy play college basketball for 5 or 6 years, and he's got a chance to be better than your freshman McDonald's All-Americans just by virtue of being, you know, 4, 5, 6 years older. And so I think you have that landscape then, where just age becomes a factor, and it's antithetical to the way you built your roster. I don't know that that was all of it, but certainly it was part of it. Again, you look at UConn and how old it was in some spots, and some other teams that made runs. And, you know, look at Tennessee. Dalton Connect was kind of a non-factor out of high school. I don't think he even had a Division I offer, went JUCO. Sometimes guys like that, just spending time in college ball, develop to a point to where if I'm matching my older guys up against your younger guys, just by virtue of having played a lot of ball, I might be able to beat you. That's a lot of words to say, but I think that the landscape of roster building changed beneath his feet and had a lot to do with it. But I think you have to look at that as a factor when you wonder why is it gone not as well for John Calipari in Kentucky the last 5 or 6 years.
You know, of course, you got to, you know, the conversation, who's going to be the next head coach at Kentucky? Of course, you know, everybody know we're recording this on Tuesday, so by the time this comes out Thursday, they may have a coach. We'll see. Plenty of big names have been mentioned. I mean, Nate Oates was one that was mentioned, you know, for people here in Alabama, which he's done, put out a statement trying to talk that down. Then you got Billy Donovan's name's been mentioned. Of course, he's with the Bulls. Dan Hurley, Scott Drew. What's your thoughts? I mean, just going, who could be the next Kentucky head coach?
Well, I think if I'm Dan Hurley, I'm staying where I am, which sounds like he's already kind of sent that shot out there. Again, we're doing this on Tuesday, so if any of this sounds ridiculous by the time people hear it, that's why. I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of guys that could probably work at Kentucky. I guess the question is how many of them want to deal with the other stuff, the constant attention, the constant expectation that you're in a Final Four and winning the SEC every year in a date and time where it's just not as easy to do that anymore. Billy Donovan's a name that's made sense to most people, but he's been out of the game for 9 years and everything has changed. So I don't know if that works. Nate Oates would have been a good choice basketball-wise. Personality fit, I don't know. I don't know that Nate Oates wants all the attention and the stuff that goes with being Kentucky's basketball coach, which is probably why he's not going to be. I think that Scott Drew's name, that was one that I was told by a source, might be the leader, but, you know, they haven't been to a ton of Final Fours either. Of course, it's Baylor. It's different. Man, I don't know. Bruce Pearl's one that would be a great fit for a lot of reasons. You know, I think in terms of guys who can handle the spotlight, he's probably one of them. I think really to me, a successful marriage for Kentucky is going to be a guy who not only has demonstrated a track record to win, but could handle the public circus that comes with that job. And I think if you can draw a line that intersects through both those traits, that's where your good coaches are going to be.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I mean, you don't see these jobs, these high-profile jobs open up like this. And it's going to be interesting. When Arkansas and Kentucky play each other next season, that's going to be a fun one.
Yeah, I mean, it always is anyway. And that was a game that, you know, a couple decades ago was the one you circled on the calendar. And frankly, one I circled on the calendar this year, but Arkansas didn't come close to meeting expectations, and Kentucky really didn't either. And that would maybe have a chance to pump some fuel back into what has always been a very interesting rivalry.
Yeah, I remember those. Nolan Richardson and Tubby Smith, Patino, yeah, and all this stuff. I mean, those were some knockout. Those were like football games on the court, really, when Arkansas was involved back then.
Yeah.
But
yeah, that's when Arkansas first got in the league, and Kentucky was kind of not used to being challenged for supremacy, and those were some fun times back in the mid-90s when – Nolan Richardson had Arkansas rolling, and Rick Pitino was doing the same at Kentucky.
You know, kind of close up our conversation on this, too, at Kentucky, kind of feel like the same thing with Calipari, because, you know, when he was dominating, when the league was not always great. I mean, it's not, you know, back then, it's not where it is now. You know, the SEC, these teams started getting better coaches. You were talking about Nate Oates, Bruce Pearl, Rip Barnes, and, you know, so many other names. Really, the conference got leveled up to Kentucky's level, too.
Phil, that's a really good point. That's probably not one that enough people bring up. Let's go back and look at pre-John Calipari landscape in the SEC. You had Billy Donovan just won a couple of national championships at Florida. I'm not going to say the league was bad, but it was usually at that time, Florida, Vanderbilt, Kentucky were pretty consistently good. Tennessee was good under Bruce Pearl at the time. But the rest of the league was kind of hit and miss. And you fast forward to now. I mean, if you had said 10 years ago that Auburn and Alabama were going to be basically powerhouses in the league and sell out the buildings every night, I think people would have laughed at that, but that's where we are. I'll give you another good example. Ole Miss has not been one of the most basketball-relevant schools around, but Ole Miss has now got a top 10 coach in Chris Beard. Mm-hmm. And I know how that happened. I know it's kind of a special situation. In a normal spot, Ole Miss is not going to get a Chris Beard, but it's got a Chris Beard. And Oxford's a place where the care level for basketball hasn't been very high historically, and there haven't been a lot of wins, a lot of NCAA tournaments and Sweet 16s and no Final Fours and all those things. And all of a sudden, you've got a program that's trying to think like a perennial Final Four type team with the hire it made, in spite of the baggage that came with it. And I just think you look across the league, Tennessee's been a school that's been kind of up and down. Rick Barnes has had them on a pretty good trajectory the last half dozen years or so where they're consistently good. You've got some teams like Tennessee that have risen up to play ball at pretty much near their historical best levels. And then some schools that, you know, were kind of afterthoughts in the basketball landscapes that have either done what Auburn's did and got to a Final Four, or are really putting forth an effort the way Ole Miss has. And the night in, night out, you know, you can just go and mark off, if you're Kentucky, you know, 10 games on the schedule that you know you're going to win. You might mark down a loss or two, and then you've got maybe half dozen toss-up games at most. It's not that way for Kentucky anymore. Night in and night out, the competitive landscape is a lot different.
Yeah, I remember years, there were some the teams Calipari had, you know, had all the five-star freshmen coming in. Some people were like, could this team go undefeated in the SEC? You wouldn't dare have that conversation now.
No. I mean, look, like I said, Connecticut, it, to start back where we started, I watched that team. It was hard to see how they lost a game to anybody. Mm-hmm. I know injuries were part of it, but even a team that dominant is not going to run the table. I think Kentucky teams that used to lose, you know, 3, 4, 5 games now, you roll that same team out there because of the portal and just the competitive landscape and the way it is hard to dominate college basketball now, maybe that same team loses 8 where it would have lost 5 before.
Yeah, so it's going to be interesting where Kentucky goes, and just, you know, the conference overall, I think the basketball side of, with the league is healthier than it's probably been in a long, long time. And I think me and you could probably keep talking about this stuff for another 25 minutes, but yeah. I told you 20, went a few minutes over. We didn't get to the football stuff we was going to talk about, but it's been fun.
Well, hey, I've got a minute if you need it, so.
All right, so since we talked Alabama and hoops, we'll leave Alabama to the side in football. Auburn football. Of course, they had their spring game this past weekend. Everybody's a question with Auburn. I think everybody's is quarterback. You know, Bruce. I'm about to say Bruce Pearl. So focused on basketball. Hugh Freeze has made a point getting better at all positions. But just your thoughts, Hugh Freeze going in the year two. What are your thoughts with Freeze going into year two, and just how important that is?
Well, I mean, it's always important. You know, Auburn has had runs where it's, you know, one a few years in a row against Alabama, and when that bar of expectation gets raised and it doesn't continue, that's when a coach is gone. Now, Alabama's taken it to a different level the last 15 years or so. But the fact remains that, Alabama and Auburn are always going to be tied very closely together. And whatever coach loses a couple games in a row to the other one's probably going to be out of a job. Now, I'm not saying Hugh Freeze has to come in and beat Alabama this year, but you know how that works in that state because you've seen it. I was surprised last year that Auburn wasn't better offensively, but I guess it goes to show you that if you just got some limits at some spots, and certainly theirs was in the wide receiver room, that it's just not going to work no matter how smart your coach is. There's too much talent in this league. I think now as much has been made of them revamping their receiver room through the portal and through high school recruiting. And for full disclosure, I've not seen their spring game. My head has been really entrenched in baseball and basketball. But I think you got to have quarterback play and receiver play. That was something that Auburn didn't have a year ago. Maybe more on the receiving room than the quarterback room, given Peyton Thorne's track record at Michigan State, where he'd had some good seasons. But I think they got to get that right. I think the defense was pretty respectable. It wasn't the most probably star-laden defense with names and draft picks that Auburn's had. But I think anytime you're a coach who's renowned for offense, and you're pretty decent on that side of the ball, that's got to be a little bit encouraging because I think you give Hugh Freeze time, and you would have to think that offensively he'll figure it out. So I guess if you want to put a sunny spin on it, maybe you can explain their offensive struggles a year ago just by talent and personnel issues that he inherited that were just not enough time in the cycle to fix. But they were pretty competitive on defense, and that's what you always worry about with offensive coaches.
Yeah, I remember his first comments when he took the job. I think when he first got in front of the team in practice in last spring, he thought, said, this does not look like what an Auburn roster should look like. So, and I tell you one thing, just a little cliff notes on the spring game. If you do plan to go forward in at some point and check them out, they do have a receiver now in Cam Coleman. It looks like they may have a star there, but again, quarterback, you know, it doesn't matter how good you are at receiver, Chris. If you can't, if you don't have a guy that can get him the ball, that's an issue. But, it's going to be interesting with them, all this basketball stuff. And, I appreciate you taking the time and go a little bit longer than we had planned. If the listeners, viewers want to check you out, where they can find you and, tell them about Southeastern 14.
Yeah, Southeastern 14 exists to cover football, baseball, and basketball at a very high level. We've kind of taken a few weeks off with football, although we've gotten back into that. We've hired a guy from your state named Chase Robinson. You may or may not know Chase.
Oh, yeah, he's been
really
on the show.
Good job yeah, he covers college football for us now, or SEC football. So we just got that off the ground with Chase last week. We'll be putting some more stuff out this week. We're just going to do some topic-based things. Of course, we've covered basketball wall-to-wall. Anytime there's a coaching change, we've got that. We've, of course, broken down all the games involving SEC on SEC this year, all the tournament games, and now turning my attention really hard towards baseball and what is a hyper, hyper-competitive league and really spending a lot of bandwidth on that. So if you want to get the highlights of what's going on in all three sports, I think you'll love what we do, and you can find our work on YouTube at Southeastern 14.
Yeah, I highly recommend everybody go check out Southeastern 14. You guys do a great job. I know I'm a subscriber on YouTube and the podcast, so I'm always checking you guys out. And, Chris, I appreciate the time, and look forward when we can do this again sometime down the road.
Yeah, thank you, Philip. Always enjoy doing your show. You do your homework, and you're a good dude, and always a pleasure to be on with you.
I appreciate it, Chris.